Hey, yo-a! Welcome to the Swords and Scrolls podcast, where Rotating Rogues Gallery joins me in discussing comics and more in the genre of heroic fantasy. I am Jared Savitas, your guide in the realm of one heart and one mind. I'm thrilled to have joining me today in discussing what is recognition, what is a soul name, my friend and pack member, Jesse. Jesse, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jared.
Oh, I appreciate you making the time in your schedule to talk about ElfQuest.
Oh, of course, of course.
We will be discussing ElfQuest Book 1, which is the first five issues of the original black and white comics, but you and I are both reading the same edition, the Starblaze edition from 1981, which is true to size, but recoloration of the original book from Warp Graphics.
Thank goodness. It's really, I like it in this format a lot. I think the coloring does justice to the work really well. Yeah, quite pleased with it.
Here's a funny little note for you on that, Jess. Apparently, Wendy Pingy, I should say, first off, ElfQuest is the creation of Wendy and Richard Pingy. It's basically a pioneer in the independent comics publishing world. It's an amazing feat that they were able to do this
together. It's really impressive, you know, that a couple could get together and have this vision, you know, and make something of it. Really a very special and I think unique story.
Definitely. But Wendy was never pleased with the coloration that Starblaze did in these graphic novels.
Really? Oh, I'm surprised because I find it beautiful, really. I think the colors really lend to kind of the funness of what it is. I don't know, like I think sometimes coloring can get really serious in nature. And I think the coloring in this particular one kind of adds to the lightheartedness of it.
I agree with you. And it's soft. It's like it's soft and magical.
Yes.
And then when it needs to be, it is harsh, like in the beginning scenes. So
yes.
I don't get it that she said that. And
well, maybe she had a different vision, you know. I can understand
sure,
that.
Sure. And it's her baby, right?
It's hers. She can feel that way totally 100% about it.
Now, before we get any deeper into the book itself, Jesse, I do ask all my new guests a little bit about their origins with heroic adventure and fantasy and such. So what was your gateway drug? How did you come to enjoy this type of literature?
Oh man, it's been a long road. I don't know, I guess like really early, early beginnings. I was a huge Pocahontas fan when I was a little girl. That was my life. There's a picture actually of me like kindergarten. This dates me how young I am, but kindergarten with my Pocahontas socks and my Pocahontas light up shoes and my Pocahontas backpack. I wanted to be her. She was everything, you know, in the Disney film. And I mean, aside from that, I remember my dad reading a lot. And when I was a kid, he would sit on the front porch when we were all outside. And I remember one time I came up and I was asking him what he was reading. It happened to be one of the Lord of the Rings books. And he read to me the Entwives. About the Entwives, like the song, poem, whatever you want to call it. I don't know, that just really stuck with me. And I've, you know, we used to watch movies at home all the time. I mean, Planet of the Apes, like I remember Nova and thinking like she was just incredible, like stunning on the screen. And, you know, and even I recently revisited Sinbad and the woman with the eye on her hand, like
Oh yeah,
it's
Caroline
great.
Monroe.
Yeah, it was so weird because I remember that image as a child, but I didn't really like think about it until maybe like the last 5 years, you know? Stuff like that. I don't know, movies, ElfQuest. I mean, personally, as you know, an adult and throughout my young adulthood, I read a lot, and that's probably more for me where my relationship with fantasy comes with. It's pretty much all I read, strictly fantasy novels, and by far like preferring tomes,
Yeah.
long epic stories.
Door stoppers.
Yeah, door stoppers, certainly, 100%. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, still like I'm a fan of like all the kind of goofy stuff too, like Adventure Time and you know,
Yeah.
all that kind of stuff. It, you know, and then recently, obviously, when I met you was when I was like, oh, you know, I've never played D&D before. How many ever years back that was at Arrow's birthday party.
At least three, right?
Yeah, I don't know, whatever that was. And you know, I think that was for me at least kind of like the accumulation of like all the things that I had loved just kind of coming together in one thing, which I've really enjoyed playing, you know. But yeah, you know, I don't know, reading Redwall and all that stuff, Kimora Pierce, all that kind of stuff. That was growing up, that was everything for me, really.
Awesome. And now, did you recently become a fan of comic books and illustrated stories?
Yeah, sure, definitely. Like right before the pandemic hit, I like started doing the OPL's Umapoke Library, their reading challenge. So they have you read, I think, 10 books every year, and they have different prompts. And I think one of the first graphic novels that I remember picking up was Saga. And that was like,
Yeah.
I really, really love it. You know, I'm waiting right now to like continue further on until they put out another
Collection.
big collection for
Yeah.
myself. But yeah, that I read one that was like called The Sculptor. That was really interesting. And I mean, since then, I've been getting into comics more and just really, I don't know, it's like finding another outlet, like a lost friend that you didn't know was there.
Yeah. So then a story like ElfQuest is kind of like the perfect pairing of that, because the story is very, like you said, it's very different, it's very significant, right? You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm not going to do a good job. To tell you the truth, in this edition that you and I have, in the afterword, Wendy and Richard wrote it. She wrote this, and I think it's great. She says, ElfQuest is a fantasy. It is an adventure. It is a romance. It is highs and lows, humor and sadness, fear and security. It's great.
Yeah, I think that's super accurate. I think it really sums it up well.
And they go on to claim that this is a story for anyone from the age of 3 to 103. I would disagree, because I picked it up. I got into it probably in 1983. Whenever the second volume was out on shelves, and there is a mall, there's still a mall, the Center Mall on 42nd and Center, used to have a bookstore in it called the Little Professor Bookstore. And when I was a kid, that's where I got my first everything. That's where I got my first everything. My first Fighting Fantasy book, my first Choose Your Own Adventure D&D book,
I love
my
Choose
first
Your Own Adventure.
modules, my first Conan book, my first everything, everything. And that's where I saw volume two of the ElfQuest books, and I bought it. And so that was my entry into ElfQuest, was that volume. And my parents saw how much I loved it. And so for the holiday, every holiday and birthday following, I got another volume. Boom, boom, boom. And
Oh, how
so
great.
that's how I got into ElfQuest. And as a kid, so this her saying it's for 3 to 103, as a kid I was like, this is pretty sexy.
Oh, for
and
sure, for
and
sure.
I'm growing up in the family I'm growing up in, there's a man and a wife, and these elves are like You and me and him and her, and maybe we'll switch off, and then
whoever.
whatever. It's just it's
It's very sexually open as far as that goes. So yeah, I think that the story at its core, sure, it could be for anyone, but I think like specifically the drawing style and like some of those things, they may or may not go over a kid's head. But I mean, I think it's a little bit overtly sexual when you look at it, but like I don't know. I think that there's something refreshing about that in the sense that like it today, modern comics are very like if the heroine doesn't have huge tits and like, it's just like scantily clad, like, oh, whoa, that's weird. But like I think for this, it's more of a statement of sexual freedom instead of just like, oh, she's hot. You know what I mean?
sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus the characters are, some people have said they're kind of androgynous. Some people,
Yes,
but I never
I could
saw
see
that. Like as
that.
a, as growing up, I never saw it. And then I had other friends that were like, oh, but they look like little children. They look like little sexy children. And I'm like, I never, I guess maybe
I
because
don't know, but yeah, they're
since
just
I
it.
grew up with it, you know what I mean? And was introduced to it younger, that I didn't see that. I just saw them as elves.
Yeah, they're elves. I don't know. I guess I would never think of them as children or see them in that way, really, because they. To me, it's about what they're saying and thinking and doing, and I mean they're very clearly elves. Look at they've got the ears. I
The
mean
ears are
like
huge.
the ears. I mean there's no way of confusing
Yeah.
that.
So here's a little background. As I was saying earlier, early independent comics publishing, and they did it themselves because they shopped it around to the big comics publishers of the time. This is in 1977. So Marvel, DC, both of them passed. They even went to smaller publishers. Things did not go great when they did that either. So they're like, we're doing it. And they create Warp. So they said that if they wanted ElfQuest to continue and grow in the direction that they had envisioned, they would become its publisher. Warp published its first issue of ElfQuest in the summer of 1978. It's a magazine-sized black and white comic. You and I have both seen these comics recently. Like I just saw them, like got my hands on one recent. Until this point, I've only had these versions in my life. But since then, Warp has been in the business of producing, publishing, licensing, and partnering ever since. Like that's
Wow, that's amazing.
amazing.
That's kind of unheard of a little bit. Yeah, that's.
And what's also funny is down the line, as now ElfQuest is steamrolling because they felt the time was right to do it because in the 70s, fantasy was hot, right?
Oh, yeah.
The Conan stories with the Frazetta covers were coming back around. Comics were getting big. Dungeons and Dragons was steamrolling a bunch of stuff. Fantasy was hot. And
Right, it was
so,
the time for it.
yeah.
And I mean, if you think about it too, like having these characters, I mean, it's drawn in that way where I think it's a very good reflection of the time.
And that's a lot of the way I look at it too. I love that it's a timepiece, but it's also timeless.
Yeah.
And I think that's the magic. Yeah, I think it's also so great that both DC and Marvel came back around and said, we want to publish ElfQuest. So Marvel first, they put it into their Epic comic book line. So they then shrunk the pages down and colorize them and put it in regular comic book format. It's okay,
It's all right.
but you can obviously see the gutters are very large at the top and the bottom of the page. So shrinking a
Yeah.
magazine size down to standard comic book size is already you're losing out. The interesting thing, though, is they did add artwork to those issues when they republished it. So there are a little, it's a little bit of a different presentation art-wise as well, which is crazy. And I just stumbled into that myself when I was cutting up that issue to make buttons and noticed when they are doing the Blood of the Ten Chiefs and the Wolf Riders are sitting around doing that and they're calling out all
Right,
the
because I was
chiefs.
you asked me about that and I was
Yeah.
like looking back at it and I was like, they don't show
They
any of the
don't.
other chiefs. I
They
was like,
do
I
in the
mean
comic.
they tell you their names, but they don't really,
They do in the epic line. It's
I'd be
crazy.
really curious to see them all.
I'll show you. And then they even put an original story in Epic Illustrated magazine for Marvel. And then over time, I think in the late 80s, 1988 maybe, their license with Marvel died out, and then DC Comics said, "Okay, we'll take you." So both companies that turned them down in the beginning came crawling back to them, which is awesome.
Isn't that funny? They probably felt so satisfied in that moment.
Right?
Look what we've
Yeah.
done.
Yes. And then after it went out with DC, they jumped on with Dark Horse, and they've been with Dark Horse ever since.
Been pretty happy, actually. I've noticed just with what I've had recently, as far as comics and stuff, a lot of the stuff is Dark Horse that I've been looking at.
Yeah.
It's kind of a surprise. Like I don't really pay attention to that stuff. I mean, you guys are more the experts on that kind of thing. I'm there for the story, like the glory,
Yeah.
all that. But yeah, I kind of have noticed that recently, when I'm
It was
checking
late
covers.
90s, early 2000s when I was like, I'm a Dark Horse guy, when everybody else was like, I'm Marvel, I'm DC. And I was like, I think I'm a Dark Horse guy.
I have
And
noticed
I
that
still claim to be.
in my collection. I've definitely noticed that as well. It's good to hear, about Wendy and Richard's success with it. And I definitely think that right now, as far as time period and things that are going on in the world, and I think that ElfQuest has a really good outlook currently in time. I think it matches well with a lot of things that people are dealing with culturally, and
Yeah.
I could see it rising in popularity. I would hope for that.
It has a really solid fan base. And to continue to like reprint the book, Dark Horse is now putting out like smaller little hardcover collections of them, which have been recolored by Wendy.
Oh, cool.
And it's like her, she's using this digital technique. I don't like it as much as this. I like, which is funny to me, that she doesn't like this,
She
these
doesn't like
editions.
this. I mean, I gotta say, there's something really about having the book. Like, I love having, the comics and stuff, but to me, like, since I am such a novel kind of person and I'm really into books, having this full color, like I was looking at the omnibus version, and it's so hard for me to even get into because it just doesn't have it when it's black and white. I feel like this series needs that color to really deliver the feelings and the message.
I can see that, but I have, in as I have aged, I've grown. I've always liked black and white magazines, always. Since a kid, I was getting Savage Tales, the 1980s version, and Savage Sword of Conan, and through there I found other magazines. And now, even in my age now, I'm discovering new magazines like The Rook and Devilina. And so I now that's my crack. My crack is comic magazines. I had never been exposed to the black and white ElfQuest until Dark Horse Comics put out those phone book omnibus collections. As I was rereading it in the color version, I was making note of panels that once, because as a kid, I didn't know it was in black and white. And so I'm reading it as an adult, and I'm looking at these panels, and now I'm trying to think like, well, if this one was just in black and white, inking that she's done and the emphasis she's put in where there are heavy darks and things like that, way more powerful in black and white than in, and so there was times where I felt like the coloring takes away from the black and white. So I have kind of like the opposite from you, which is great because we both can appreciate it
Oh
in
yeah. And
whatever form.
I think with like each with different stories and whatnot, I think each of it has a different place. I think I personally prefer with ElfQuest the full color. There are things though, like with Witcher, that I think are more powerful, like you've said, with black and white, and I think it lends itself to that medium because, in general, it's a darker, poetic kind of thing, and I think that works really well with that. But I mean, I don't know. Still, the pops of color, I think, occasionally, the emphasis, I think, is nicely done a lot of times. Not
I don't mean to take away from it in any
at
way.
all. Not at
Okay,
all.
so I've got one last little bit here about Wendy and Richard that you will probably appreciate. Okay, so they were married in like 72, and by 74, Wendy had started her illustration career. She did a lot of drawing for like science fiction magazines
Cool.
of the 70s, but in the mid 70s, Wendy started to trod the boards, they say, as a at comic conventions as an actress and a dancer, or, you know,
Love it.
portraying Red Sonja in a stage play called The Red Sonja and the Wizard Show. And the wizard was played by Frank Thorne, and Frank Thorne is the artist of the original 70s Red Sonja comic book that appeared, was in Marvel Premiere, and then the her volume one series under just the title Red Sonja. Here is, like, that alone is great, and I
It's
love
great. It's
it.
really funny, and
And
I
seeing pictures of
really
them
love that.
is a riot, you know what I mean? And yeah,
What
and
fun.
she does a great Sonja, and he's the classic goofball wizard with a robe and pointy hat covered with stars. Love it.
Perfect.
But that led to her getting professional comic work. She wrote issue number 6 of that Red Sonja series from 1977, which you read
Oh my
when I
gosh.
loaned you those volumes.
Okay.
I went back and looked at it this morning. I reread it, and it's, I don't know if you remember, but it's the story where she gets lured into a tower going after her buddy, and it's filled with like insectoid people and a
Oh my
big
gosh.
giant.
Are you kidding? That one was impossible to forget. I remember reading that one and thinking like, whoa, this
Wendy wrote that.
that's great. Oh
Wendy
wow.
wrote that.
But
And if I
oh
had a
man.
dream come true, it would be to have Wendy draw it. I would love to see her
Oh.
draw that story and put it out. Dynamite Comics, if you're listening, or anybody who has any weight to pull over there,
Oh my gosh.
hook up with Wendy, pay her to redraw that Red Sonja story and put it out
That would
as
be
a one shot.
so, that'd be so neat. I mean, just as it is, that one is super memorable because the imagery is like definitely overtly sexual, and it's kind of funny because, you know, like
Oh,
with all the criticism with like, oh, you know, ElfQuest is hypersexualized
yeah.
or whatever, you know, like I think that's kind of amusing. I think it was really memorable though, and a neat adventure because of
Not to
that.
jump over to talking about that comic book, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Oh,
There
for
are some
sure.
really panels in there that are like, oh, this is beautiful. And Red
Yeah.
Sonja is being presented as a beautiful woman here. That a lot of that's Frank Thorne, but there's like close-up scenes of like those insectoids. Spoilers, everybody. Insectoids, the little insectoid dudes have little vials filled with that golden honey liquid.
Yeah.
And when she's all hung up and they pour it in her mouth, so there's these close-ups of her luscious, kissable mouth, and they're pouring and they're pouring the
The
crap in her mouth.
nectar or
I'm like,
whatever
oh,
it is.
okay.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it,
That's
dude.
super interesting. I would have never have known that. That's
It's
great,
funny.
great tidbits of information, Jared. I
Yeah.
love
Okay.
it.
This first volume, we are introduced to the Wolf Riders, which is a group of elves that live in the forest. And they are led by a chief. His name is Cutter. And he carries the blood of 10 chiefs. He is 11th in the line of chiefs of this group of elves. They are forced out of their home by humans and tragedy. And they are forced to retreat into the tunnels of the trolls who betray them, and they are pushed out into the desert. And they travel this wasteland. They don't know what the hell a desert is. And
To sorrow's end.
they travel it to
They
sorrow's end.
don't even know that it's
Yep.
sorrow's end until they get there, but it is.
And Sorrow's End, they discover, is another tribe of elves. These are sun elves. The wolf riders, they spend their lives in the dark, sleep all day. The sun elves, they're opposite.
And they're gentle. They're
And they're
gentle
gentle.
people.
They're
They're
not
gentle people.
barbarians.
They're not like the wolf riders.
I prefer a wolf rider life myself. I
Yeah,
don't know
me
about
too,
you.
for sure, 100%.
I mean, all those suntanned elves look great. You know, boys and girls with their shirts
Sure,
open look
sure,
great.
sure.
But
Where's the excitement? Where's the adrenaline?
I need some leaves overhead.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I think the introduction is really funny. You know, the way that they depict humans is very like grotesque. You know, almost ape-like. It's quite funny. You know, in comparison to the high ones,
Yeah, they're a step
they're.
over of primitive. They're
Oh yeah, humans for
step
sure.
over Neanderthal even, you know what I mean? They're like
Oh yeah, they're total
the early
Ooga
man, but they're not like cavemen, but
Booga.
they are using flint spears and things like that.
Yeah, I think in particular one of my favorites in the beginning of the panels is on page 5. It is showing initially the High One elves when they first come, how they're hiding in fear in the bushes. And you know that was then, and then the next one is now, and it shows Cutter there with Skywise, and they're panels that are you know intentionally kind of mimicking each other, and I really appreciate that kind of explanation visually on how things have changed.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. That always stood out at me. There's panels that have always stuck with me, and they still do. They still have the same power that
Oh
they
yeah.
did from when I first read it.
For sure. I think also another thing that made Elfquest kind of interesting for me was, you know, them being able to speak without words. I think that was really, you know, to send to one another is something that was really cool. I hadn't seen like visually in a comic or, you know, even explained like that in the story for really ever.
Yeah, because the wolf riders are able to send thoughts to each other,
Like
talk to
telepathic
each other,
wink.
and to their wolves. They have a connection with their wolves that goes back to their origins, and they have the same connection where they can pass words between each other. The
Yeah,
wolves, of
I'm.
course, simpler. You know what I mean? Like they've got like one like help or food or whatever. They can do like a single word to the elves.
Right.
It's more
They're.
more feeling along with that word than just the word itself.
Right. Companions, but not like sentient all the way.
Yes. At
I don't know if
Sorrows.
you.
Oh no,
Oh.
please go. Please go.
I was just gonna say, I don't know if you knew this, but I used to have like a really large dog. Like I had a giant German shepherd. He was humongous. And a lot of times, you know, after he passed away, like it's really cool to read this and just kind of imagine what it would have been like in ElfQuest, you know, if my giant dog and I could mount up and like storm out into the woods.
Hell
Yeah,
yeah. So you get it.
I get it for sure. There's a special connection there. I mean, big dogs are they're like great protectors, you know, and they have your back. There's something about that that I really understand.
Wolf riders, desperate for food and water after crossing the desert, just bum rush the sun elves. They don't, you know, they're like, we've been betrayed and lied to. They're untrusting. So they go, they raid the place. Cutter meets eyes with a female elf. Her name is Lita. And something happens that neither of them were expecting or prepared for. But once it happens, there's no ignoring it. And that's recognition. When they see each other, they learn each other's soul name, though they don't know what it is. It just appears in their mind when they
It's
see
just
this person.
it's a word. It just it's like you cannot ignore it. It's there. Yeah. The fact that Cutter is like sunburnt to heck. Starved, dying of thirst. He's got his whole tribe with him, you know. And there she is with her green eyes, you know, looking up. I think
Yeah.
they even relate it to, oh yeah, eyes as green as fresh young leaves. Like, oh man, your home just got burned down in the woods, and you're seeing a piece of it there.
Yeah. So uncontrollably, with the water and the food they steal, Cutter steals her, and off they run, and that begins this whole like love triangle, really, between Lita and Cutter and a sun elf named Rayek, whom Lita has known her entire life, and he's kind of always. I'm sure they've hooked up, and I'm sure he's always kind of been there, and everyone just kind of assumed they were going to be life mates because they were not recognized, and the sun folk don't really live by recognition. Like, it doesn't really matter to them.
And they don't send either, not unless they really have, unless they have a power or something. It's a bit different. They're not quite the same.
But you, again, like we said, you can't ignore it. If you try to fight the recognition, you will go mad. You'll get sick. You'll just, you,
Cutter starts like dying pretty
yeah, it
much. I mean,
hurts,
he's
man.
dying. And I mean, Lita in the same, she legit is. They show this one panel of her, she's dreaming or she's tossing and turning in bed. And she has this vision of Cutter, yelling, calling out to her. Oh, he starts turning feral almost in this dream. I mean,
Yeah, almost into like a wolf being
almost into a
himself.
wolf. She cannot ignore it. No one can. But yet she still has these pressures, I think, of her people or who she thinks she is versus who she really is, kind of. There's this fight within her, and she's trying to ignore recognition. No one can.
And because it's a very strong statement they're saying here, it's also her choice.
That's
You know what I
right.
mean? Because
For
the
sure.
both of the male elves are like, she will be mine, and she's like, hey,
I'm not a prize to be
I'm not a prize
won.
to be won. When she says it is great, and she's like, I'm nobody's property, man. Like,
That's right.
I have say, I have choice,
Well,
right?
and the thing that I love about it is, so they have, these different ones about the different challenges that Rayek and Cutter go through to try and, who's going to be able to court Lita. And I think the best part about it is even afterwards, Cutter, proclaims that he's won, and she shoots him down right away. You haven't won, you haven't won me. You just have the right to court me, and even though he's conquered his most
Yeah.
inner fear, she still tells him, "No, it's my decision."
And I love that through the whole process, as there's this back and forth between them where she's like, he's so rough. He's a barbarian. I don't know what. And he's young. She's older than him. And apparently, I think she says like centuries older than him. Like, she's a lot older than him.
Significantly, she's
Yeah.
significantly older than he
And
is.
she's like,
Yeah.
this is just a young dude. And like, look at him.
He's a
He
hothead. He's wild. Look
eats raw
at
meat. Like, what are these
He sleeps
guys?
with these wolves. What the heck?
Yeah, he doesn't have any power. Like, Rayek has powers. Like, some of the elves have tapped into old ways power and hypnotism, levitation, things like that,
Healing.
healing.
Lita's healing.
Yeah, some of the wolf riders have a little bit of it. Their healer was killed, so they don't have a healer anymore. But they have tree shapers, so they could grow plants and awesome things like that. I love that through all of this, the wolf riders are like, what is going on? Why are you even doing this? You can't ignore the recognition. It means you're going to have strong children, because there will always be children from recognition. And that's how we keep going. That's how our
That's how
pack
this
remains strong.
works.
That's how
Yeah.
this works. Like, you
Like they know
can't.
it's a given. They know it's a given, but for the Sun Tribe, since that's something that they're not used to them, they don't really fully understand that, like, you can do all these challenges, everything you want, but like that's not going to change the fact of recognition. I mean, when she keeps hearing the word Tam in her head, she doesn't even know what it means. But that's what it is. It's fascinating. It's really well thought out. I mean, one of the things too that I really appreciated and found interesting was when Lita is talking, I think, to their high mother. She's looking over at Dewshine in one moment, because she doesn't understand how she could be a mother when she sees this other elf, Dushine, just completely give herself up to being a mother. And that's really Dushine's identity, is being a mother. And in that moment when I was reading that, I really resonated with that because, as a mom myself, my kids are a really big part of my life, but I was afraid that that was going to define me or change me in a way that, being somebody who loves exciting things, I rock climb. There's things in my life that are maybe not aligned with this gentlehood idea of what motherhood is. But once you have your kids, you kind of realize that, okay, that is an aspect of me, but that does not define me. I can still have my hobbies and my interests, and I can still go do some crazy stuff, some people might say, and it's okay. You can be a different type of mother. And I think Lita kind of goes through that, this worry about, what that means to her. And I find that really meaningful, at least for me, when I saw that. I was like, good, wow, it's nice to see other people struggle with that too. Or did at some point. I mean, for me, that's gone past, now, but
I love the doubt and the self yeah the self-doubt and the worry and everything that happens, like all the drama that
oh
happens
yeah,
in the
and
story.
I think, like, the way that the wolf riders live, that's really calling to her in a way, and she doesn't even realize it because she doesn't think she's this gentle, she doesn't see herself in that kind of person. But like the wolf riders are the opposite of that. Like her heart is yearning for Cutter because she desires that kind of adrenaline and, the way that they handle their lives and their kids. It's living it to the fullest rather than the quiet life that Lita comes from.
It's many layered for
Oh, for
people that
sure.
like look at it and just take it for what they see without looking into it deeper. I our friend our mutual friend Patrick, I think he's a convert because he initially saw ElfQuest as like, ah, what is no, uh-uh. But then when he started reading it, he was like, I am in. I'm in 100%. I now understand, and I'm gonna get all of it
Yeah, I
and read
love
all of it.
that. I love it. I mean, really, it's exploring the full range of motion. I mean, just like you said, the quote from Wendy in the beginning, I really think that's what made me like this so much, when you lent it to me, whenever that was. I mean, I went and got the book right away. I was like searching on eBay almost immediately after I finished it because it really does. It hits all the spots. It's an epic. It's romantic. It's, there's family origins and like trauma and drama. It has it all. I don't know.
One example for you to look at for what I'm talking about, a black and white image page, it would be page 57 in our editions. If you are reading at home in the Dark Horse Omnibus edition, it would be page 71. This is where the Wolf Riders are introduced to Saba, who is the eldest member of the Sun Elves, and she is still retains height. The elves, when they first came to the earth, were tall. And over time, the wolf riders and even the sun folk got shorter. What I guess a person would typically think of when they think of an elf. But Saba is so old, she is still tall. But when they go and they meet her, and she's in that throne, and her long robe is flowing all about the floor. And then there's that little round close-up panel of her in the bottom right. It's etched so intricately with ink that in color it's lost. But if you look at it in black and white, you're just like, whoa. Like that's where I'm at, where I'm like, see the black and white, black and white's got power when it needs it. Like she Wendy di Wendy does it. That's amazing to me too, that she at times can keep the lines very clean and simple. And then at times she does this very moody, because even the very next page, And when Sava stands up and you get her full height, like there's a dark inking all and like her center, tops to bottom center, and the rest of her is all very light. So th there's like a very definite like push forward in the art. And then you'll get a panel like that top right one where the wolf riders are reacting to her height and looking up at her. It's very clean and open. But then the close up of her on the bottom left is again got a lot of intricate inking around her eyes and cheekbones to kind of show her age and depth.
I think that panel in particular showing her, like that clearly, like her face, I mean, it could be so much more impactful in black and white. It's kind of interesting how it seems like she goes back and forth. Like there are some moments that are really profound that she uses a lot of line work. And I think it's a really good choice. It's kind of, I get what you're saying though. I would appreciate seeing it that way.
We could go on and on about it. I mean, ultimately, I think we both agree that it is a story that's worthwhile. People should, if you have any interest at all, check it out. The great thing is, if you go to elfquest.com, you can read it. It's all there to be read on their website. Lots of it. Lots and lots of it. A lot of their
Lots of
offshoot series,
it.
because like they didn't just do ElfQuest and Follow Cutter. They did series that followed the kids. They did series that were in the future. They did series that are sea elves. They did all kinds of stuff. They did it's amazing what they've done with just the start of this simple yet not simple ElfQuest story. There's also been a through Kickstarter and Backerkit, they funded what they call an audio movie, and it is presented 10 episodes as a podcast, and it's basically this volume done as an audio drama, full cast, music, sound effects. I think it's pretty well done. It's based on this story. They do make some changes because I there were a couple things in the story where I was like, wait a minute, that ain't in the company, but that's fine. It's another version of the story, and every version of a story is going to be a little different.
I mean, you got to appreciate that somebody has taken it to a different type of media and done something that's actually pretty cool with it. As I've said before, I think the voice actor that they chose for Cutter is perfect. It just he sounds exactly the way that I imagined him to in my head, and I don't know, whoever selected that guy, they were spot on.
I think the guy they got to do Cutter's father, Bearclaw, I thought he was really great. And I feel like I've heard him before. When I was listening to it, I wanted to say that he also did Wolverine for a Wolverine audio drama thing. Could be totally wrong. And,
I
I
mean,
could
that
have
can make
taken the,
sense, kind of chiseled, and
yep,
that
I
makes
could have
sense.
taken the time to
You
look it up as well, but
know,
we're busy folk.
pointing on Bearclaw, I think that also within this book, kind of the turning point when they're going back and calling out the 10 chiefs, I think that that was something, or even when they're talking about Madcoil, you know, that moment with him and his father, I think it really adds depth to Cutter's character, and I don't know. I think that's kind of a turning point for Lita as well, as she's learning more about Cutter, and I think that makes all the difference.
I think that's where she kind of sees that family is very important to these wolf riders, and like the pack, that they're stronger together, that this is it, this is everything. She sees there's more to them than she's judging a book by its cover, and
I
she
mean,
gets this.
you can't blame her. I mean, legitimately, when they raided their village, he didn't even grab water. He just saw her, and that was like, yep,
Yeah.
yoink,
Little that, hey man, look, you're getting recognized. You don't know what these feelings are.
That's right. You just act, and that's it.
You're just acting. All right, Jesse. So I think we've done it.
Yeah, I think so.
If people don't realize that we enjoy the book and we're not just talking shit, then I don't know.
Yeah, then they totally don't know what's going on. They must be confused.
Okay. Again, Jesse, thanks for taking the time to do this with me. I enjoyed speaking with ElfQuest of you, and I'm thrilled that I was the person that introduced you to this story, and I am glad. Yeah, I love that you
Yeah,
love it.
I'm super thankful for this, and Fables was the other one that I appreciate you sending my way. I really
Word.
love it, loving it,
Yeah,
man.
right on. All right,
Cool.
so we'll get out of here. And before I go, I love to tell people to please support your local comic book shops and please support your local public library. Libraries really need it. We got to keep them alive, people.
That's right.
And until next time.
Thanks, Jared.
Yeah, you got it.
I appreciate being your guest. I'm
And
probably under unqualified, but
no,
I enjoy it.
you were great. I like seriously, I really appreciate your perspective coming from a reader very deeply into novels and stories. It's easy to come and look at a graphic novel and say how great it is because you like the way it looks. Sometimes the art overtakes the story. For you to come and be like, man, the story was it
Oh yeah.
for that, and then for the art just to complement it and the icing on the cake.
I mean, I feel like ElfQuest is the perfect example of it. It's Richard and Wendy, it's a perfect marriage. It's a great story with beautiful artwork.
Yeah.
It's perfect. Yeah.
All right. Well, going out with a howl. So until next time.
Let's do it.
Ow!
Oh!
Dumb.
I love it.